mitochondrial disease for over a decade, was previously the CEO at BioElectron. And in 2019, BioElectron was acquired by PTC, and along with the PTC 743 and our other drugs, I joined the PTC team as well, so I can continue to work with a larger experienced team in helping to deliver PTC 743 to patients with mitochondrial disease. Obviously, many people know what was formerly EPI 743 that we're now calling PTC 743, as we've been really studying it in patients with mitochondrial disease since 2009. In fact, the longest treated patient with PTC 743 remains on treatment now over 11 years, which is really, really incredible and really exciting. And, you know, we were really one of the first companies to be doing drug development in mitochondrial disease. And as pioneers, we made a lot of important learnings along the way in terms of how to develop a drug for mitochondrial disease, how to do clinical trials, how to work closely with MitoAction and patient communities and physicians to ensure successful clinical trials. And we really stand at a point now where we're able to put a lot of those learnings gained over a long period of time into practice. And our trial that we just started at the end of 2020 in children with mitochondrial disease and associated epilepsy, which we call the MITEI trial, is one of those trials. We also recently launched a trial, a phase three trial in Friedreich ataxia, which also incorporates a lot of the important learnings we've made as pioneers in the field of developing therapies for mitochondrial disease patients.
Wow, I'm so encouraged when you say that you've been working and helping patients and you have somebody who's been successful for 11 years with the medication. I'm a mom of a mito patient, and a long time ago I said, I don't know if we'll ever have a cure, but I will be thankful for a treatment. And I'm so thankful for you for digging in and sticking with us and not giving up on the mito community and moving towards something that's more glamorous or splashier to treat. So thank you so much for your dedication to our community. That's very important.
Yeah, and I think for us, this really is a purpose and a mission. We began this work with 743 many years ago. And, you know, as I've said to many people over the years, we won't stop till we can get to the finish line. And you know, like any pioneering effort, there's going to be successes, there's going to be failures, there's going to be ups, and there's going to be downs. You know, I think definitionally, when you're trying to do something and get a drug approved for a disease that for which there's never been an approved drug, it's not going to be easy. If it was going to be easy, it would happen already. And I think we embrace that challenge. We are incredibly grateful for the trust and long-term partnership with so many patients and families around the world, and organizations like MitoAction and other patient foundations. I think that the most important thing we've learned is this is a team effort, and that we all have to work together. And the only way we're going to get there is by working together through the good times and also some of the tough times.
I love that you say that, because my role with MitoAction is helping people find their community and learning that they are a sense of community. So many of us in the rare disease world feel so isolated and just kind of wafting out there on the sea. And when we can start corralling and putting people into what I call the blanket fort, they realize that they aren't alone. And now we're able to even find more people for studies like yours through organizations with patient advocacy, and not only just give them that sense of community, but also bringing back hope, which for a long time was really sometimes a four-letter word. So this is great to be part of this, and we are excited to help you get more patients involved. So let's go through what's involved with the study now for patients. Let's just quickly go through what the study's involved, and then we'll talk about how we do it safely during COVID.
A really good question, because I'm sure that's on everyone's mind.
Yeah.
So first is I mentioned that we've been studying 743 for a number of years, and really one of the early reports we got from the physicians treating patients with 743 is they were noticing an effect on really bad seizures. Kids with mito tend to have really serious seizures. that often don't respond to typical seizure drugs. And the reason for that's quite simple, that the seizures are, in myo patients, are caused by mitochondrial and energy problems. Typical seizure drugs don't target those pathways. They do something else. And it's also known that there are some sort of standard and traditional anti-epileptic medications or anti-seizure medications that actually make energy stress higher. It actually works against what you're trying to fix. And so it became clear early on that therapies that target mitochondrial disease problems could affect these seizures. And so we were getting reports early on that kids who had bad seizures or continuous seizures, also known as status epilepticus, were doing better, having fewer seizures when they were treated with 743. And we've noticed this in a few different diseases. We had reports in a kid with Lee syndrome who had seizures. We also, with our collaborators at the Ospedale Pediatrico Bambino Gesù in Rome, they conducted a study with several children with PCH6, which is a very rare mitochondrial disease subtype, where seizures often start within the first weeks to months of life and continue without response to seizure medications. And we noticed in the children we treated in that study that there was a marked reduction in the number of observed seizures, as well as the ability to stop the state of continuous seizures or status epilepticus. We also looked at days that kids would spend in the hospital as a result of their disease, and those went down significantly from pre-treatment periods. So that was another important piece of data along the way that told us that, you know, studying PTC-743 for the symptom of really bad seizures in mitochondrial disease is an important approach, or potentially very useful approach, to trying to advance PTC-743 for approval. We also know, and one of the things that came to us over the years is, as we learned more and more about exactly how PTC-743 was working, it actually works on pathways that have been linked to really bad seizure disorders. So now we had a combination of scientific evidence and clinical evidence that really made this trial such an important study, and one in which we have a lot of confidence. I think everyone knows that clinical trials are tough. Clinical trials are different than just clinical care. So being in a clinical trial, there's very strict criteria of who can enter. There's very careful evaluations of what happens in the trial, and things have to be studied very, very closely. And we also know that mitochondrial disease itself is really hard to study because it's so different. You can have two kids with mito who may have the same syndrome, but really different diseases. You could have, you know, different symptoms, different rates of progression. And you know, we don't have really easy measurements like blood pressure, or, you know, if in diabetes, you can measure the blood sugar, and that can tell us, are we making a difference in the disease or not? We don't have that in mito. It's really hard. And so the idea that we could study something like seizures, which are countable, mm-hmm. you know, mom and dad can see for themselves and tell that it's happening or not happening, right. That the FDA, for example, has approved drugs on reducing seizures. You know, so the idea that we could actually do a mito study using, borrowing from the experience of others and have things that we can easily measure, you know, is great. And I think really, again, helped us become very enthusiastic about doing this study, because, you know, the most important thing is, if you have a drug that you think can work for patients, you want to make sure that in a trial you can show and measure that they got better.
Right. That is the true goal is, like you said, we're going to borrow some symptomology and some measurable outcomes from other trials and known, and then you're working towards actually finding a positive endpoint with this. Whether, you know, I think I'm having a hard time describing this, but knowing that the endpoint is going to bring about a better quality of life for people, I think is definitely what we're all hoping for.
Yeah, and I could tell you, when we started on this journey over a decade ago, We met and spent a lot of time with a lot of the mito doctors in the United States and Italy and Europe and else all around the world. And we spent a lot of time trying to answer this question: how do we measure outcome in mitochondrial disease trials? How do we do it? I mean, and again, it sounds so strange, but when no one's done it before, there's not a playbook, there's not a script, there's not a how to do mitochondrial disease trials. That book wasn't written yet. We had to write it.
Right.
And when we would talk with the FDA and talk with regulatory authorities, it was hard for them too. It's not like they'd seen a bunch of these trials. It's not like they'd had approved drugs for mitochondrial disease. And, you know, that's a really big challenge. And so to be able to come into this trial where we can say there are approved drugs for pediatric seizure syndromes.
Right.
That alone is so helpful, both in terms of how to design a trial and how to work effectively with the regulatory authorities, because they're our partners too.
Right.
They're part of this teamwork. They're part of this partnership that has to be in place if we're ever going to get across the finish line.
That is a really good point, that we have to look at the regulatory bodies as our partner and not as an adversary. Everybody wants to get to a better quality of life, especially when there's children involved. And I think you've really set yourself in for great success, but I'm sure there are some times where it's heartbreaking, you know, and looking at what you know what you can accomplish, but sometimes the maze to get there is just daunting. So again, thank you for sticking in there with us. Let's go over who can qualify for the trial, how to get more information. And again, COVID, it's almost like a noun or a verb nowadays. How do we do this with COVID? And what steps do we have in place to make sure that patients who are already fragile stay safe and can participate and hopefully experience what our anticipated outcomes are?
Yeah, so I'll take the first part and then get into COVID. So anytime we do a clinical trial, one of the key parts is you have to have specific criteria. We call them inclusion criteria. And those are just certain requirements or boxes you have to check to be eligible for a trial. And that's something we think a lot about and develop ourselves as a company, but we also get a lot of input from physicians, from the patient communities, and also from the regulatory agencies. They have some very strong guidance that's helpful as well. And one of the things that's really important in setting up these criteria is make sure you get people in the study who are most likely to show an effect. And that's obviously a big challenge in mito, because even though you may have two kids who both have seizures, they may be really different. We know mito is, no two mito kids are alike. And that's a challenge, but we embrace that challenge. But when we put that into practice, we have to just set up some framework to make sure we have the best chance of success. And so for this trial, we're enrolling children, so under the age of 18, it's very important that there's a genetic confirmation of mitochondrial disease, so we know that it is mitochondrial disease.
Okay, good point.
Then there's a requirement that there have to be seizures, a history of seizures, and we want to make sure that they're occurring over a certain period of time before enrolling in the trial. So usually 6 months, we say, is there a history of at least 6 months of having seizures? And have they not responded to regular medications? Are these still occurring at a frequency, even though other medications were tried? And that's really important as well.
Okay.
And so those are really the main criteria. Now, I'll also say one of the things that I know a lot of parents are going to ask is, what about the supplements my child is on? What about, and this is something we've talked a lot about this over the years. And for this trial, what we're asking is that we're allowing patients to stay on their supplements. For the most part, there's a couple of key ones that just have to be checked on, but we're letting you stay on the supplements, but they have to be stable. So we don't want to change it. Because what we want to say is, okay, in your everyday life now, if we put 743 on top, are we making a difference? Well, to know that, we have to make sure that nothing else changes. You can't start three new medications and say, it worked. Well, it doesn't, you can't really do that. And the other important part is this is a placebo what we call a placebo-controlled trial, which means that for a period of time in the trial, some of the patients who enroll will get placebo, some will get 743. The reason for that is that's what we're required to do to clearly show that 743 is causing the benefit. So the fact that there's going to be kids who are going to go on placebo, we wanted to make sure that we don't take away their other supplements. We don't want to take away their other therapies. We want this to be like, just like it was everyday life. You're taking your regimen, and now we're going to put 743 on top of that or placebo on top of that and see what the difference is. Now, I will point out that after the placebo control period, which is going to last 6 months, all children who are enrolled in the trial will be eligible to get 743. So if you got placebo for the first 6 months, you will then be put on 743 for a period of time.
Okay.
And that's really important because we want to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to get the drug.
Absolutely. And those who are on it for the first 6 months, they get to continue on, correct?
That's correct. That is absolutely correct.
At their choice, obviously. Okay.
Yes, always.
So how is the 743 administered?
So it's an oral medication. And for this study, it's a liquid, which is really important because I know a lot of kids will have a feeding tube. And so it's easily administered to the feeding tube or can be administered through a syringe into the mouth. And it's taken with food 3 times a day. So we always say breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Sure.
And with meals, and the meals actually help the absorption of the drug. So it works really well together.
Wow, very well thought out. And better, it's always good to try to stay within the patient's regular schedule for better compliance and adherence. So that was good on you guys to get that designed and figured out.
Yeah.
So basically 6 months to under 18 would be your inclusion criteria and a genetic confirmed diagnosis, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so they can go out to the website. It's the MIT-E study.com to find out more information. Is there any cost to the patients to be involved in this study?
Yeah, good question. So first, I just want to point out, the study website has a lot of really useful information and more on inclusion. Also, information at the sites at the different hospitals where we're doing this study. Yeah. We have several open now. We're going to be opening more throughout the United States as well as outside of the United States. So we'll be doing this trial in the United States, in countries in Europe, and potentially in Japan and potentially South America. So we're really trying to make this a global clinical trial.
Wow.
And we'll continue to update on the site, on the website, what sites are open. I think it's also important for families to know, just because your doctor or your local physician is not participating in the trial, you can still participate in the trial. And we can certainly, through the website, contact us, and our patient advocacy groups can also help make sure that you get referred to the right site and get the information on contacting sites, because this study is open to all children who would meet the requirements. And say you live in a part of the country where there may be a study site open later, but not now, and you want to participate now, that's okay. You can go wherever you want.
Okay.
In terms of cost, we are helping with the cost for travel. That's really important. We don't want study participation. Participating in clinical trials is hard. It's hard for families. It's hard, I know, to have a child who's sick, to travel often takes a village. I mean, if it's a portable, there's a lot of equipment, portable ventilators, wheelchair, all of that takes a lot. And it may take one parent, it may take a parent and a grandparent, a parent and a friend, just to travel. So we're really aware of that, and we want to help support that. We don't want this to be a hardship, because we know it takes a lot. And then if you have a few kids, then what about the other kids? And so we know that all of these things are really important. And we're going to provide support for that, and more information could be gotten through the website.
Excellent.
But this does lead me to the COVID question, because I know, we've been thinking about doing this trial for a long time, and we were so excited, to be doing this as part of PTC when PTC acquired 743, and there was our priority as a company to put all of our muscle behind 743 and getting a drug to people with mitochondrial disease. And then COVID occurred. And we had a really tough choice, because kids with mito, you know, a cold in the winter, the flu could be a really serious illness.
Right.
I mean, to think about COVID, that's really, really scary. But at the same, and at the same time, we knew that just because things in the world were slowing down because of COVID, mitochondrial disease doesn't slow down. The disease doesn't take a timeout. It doesn't stop. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say, we're not going to do any, no disease till COVID's over. No, the disease is still there. Yeah. And that's why we made the very important decision that we will move forward with this trial safely and carefully, but we're going to move forward. We felt that more than ever, we needed to push forward to get a therapy for kids with mitochondrial disease. And so we did a lot of things in setting up this trial with COVID in mind. So first, we have a lot more study sites than we've had ever before in a 743 trial. We wanted to have more geographic access, knowing that travel is a challenge. And as I said, as always, we're going to support travel to the study sites. The other thing we did, and it's interesting, there was actually a story about this in the New York Times today, was we, not our trial, but just how clinical trials in general are relying more on remote visits and home visits. So patients don't have to travel as often to the study sites. Now, obviously, some visits are still needed in this trial, and that's very important, but we've minimized them as best as possible. So the actual amount of travel and number of times you'd have to go to a hospital is much less. Wow. And so instead, we're going to rely on remote monitoring. For example, the way seizures are counted in this trial is using a fancy kind of iPad device where family members will enter the number of seizures in the diary. So we can get that data, you know, without, you know, electronically, right, remotely. We'll also allow for remote assessments, you know, nurses who can come and draw blood potentially from the home rather than going to a study site to get blood drawn. So all those types of things we thought of in this study to minimize the burden of the study. Now, I'll also say, I know that I've got a friend who said when they, the idea of a nurse I don't know coming into my home, we want to make sure that's safe, you know, because we're told don't let strangers into. So we are making sure we're taking every effort to ensure that everyone is maintaining as strict safety standards as possible. You know, as one of the first things we learned in medical school is first do no harm. We want to make sure that we keep people safe and that there's no additional risk of participating in this trial. And we've made every effort to do that.
Wow, that you jumped into my head again, because the thought of home healthcare, again, it's opening up the door to potentially Pandora's box. And so the thought that PTC has already taken that into consideration, figured out their standard of care and how that needs to be implemented in with their trial patients is amazing. This virtual home visit opportunity, I think, is a wonderful asset to the trial community, to be able to have virtual interfacing, plus, like you said, the electronic documentation of the seizures, all of that will definitely lessen the burden on families. And as you, I'm sure, have figured out, just sometimes travel alone is detrimental to mito kids. And so you're probably going to have a much better picture of their everyday life, because you aren't adding the layer of travel to it, or the, you know, and that's a whole, you know, that's a physical fatigue, that's a mental fatigue, that's a whole nother thing. So this is, I think, actually working to your advantage to really see, you know, that true everyday experience with this medication in their home environment.
Yeah, and that's really one of the things we, you know, we're so aware of that, Stephanie. And you know, the fact that travel itself is just, you know, I always, you know, say, you know, even when you go to a regular doctor's visit, just that alone, trying to find parking, you know, depending on the distance from the parking lot to the hospital, if you have to stay in a hotel, all of that for everyone is disorienting. Imagine if you have a disease that of fatigue and energy. I mean, that it's just, it's worse. And so we want to minimize that experience, and we certainly don't want that to get in the way of really understanding if the drug's working or not.
Right. No, I actually think that how you're coordinating this sounds absolutely scientifically for the best outcomes. So when they do come to the site, like, Do you guys, are you able to say like what's the length of stay, like they're for their initial, hi, welcome to the study, here's all your information, like what, do you know what that visit's going to look like for our patients, or is that all things they can find out on the website?
Yeah, so those are the types of information I think the sites will be better able to handle. I'll say this though, we've done our best to really minimize the burden. I mean, there's certain things we have to do, right? There's certain things, you know, a doctor has to examine you. You know, we have to do certain tests, all those things. But they should all occur within a day. It shouldn't be a multiple day process. But the other thing is each site really has their own way of setting things up depending on how things work at their facilities. But I can tell you, you know, we take picking a study site very seriously. Right. And we wanted to make sure that we have sites that know how to do clinical trials, that have a team that can help support families and know what it's like for a family to be in a clinical trial. Mm-hmm. And so really thoughtful about those things. And I know sometimes in clinical trials that, you know, a child may end up at a doctor that's different and a site that's different that they're not used to. And that can be very scary. Mm-hmm. I can say that can change that concern, but I can tell you that we are so fortunate to have so many wonderful mitochondrial disease physicians that are participating in this study that, you know, I'm a physician too, and I can endorse any one of them. And so while someone may be new and a site may be different, I think you're getting, you know, incredible care with incredibly caring, thoughtful, and experienced teams at all of these sites.
I agree. I've looked at your rollout on who's already set up and ready to go, and it is truly the creme de la creme. So way to go for finding these partners that are willing to participate in the study. Dr. Klein, what phase are we at with PTC right now as far as clinical trial studies? I know a lot of our community is familiar with phase one, phase two, phase three. So where are we at with this one?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's interesting because traditionally people think of, you know, phase one, phase two, phase three, and, you know, rare disease, it could be a little bit different sometimes. And I think each case in rare disease is different. If we had to put a number on this study, we would say it's a 2/3.
Okay.
But I always say, you know, step back from the labels and say, what are we really saying? Well, what we're saying is it's a study that if it's positive and the data are convincing, it could potentially be approved as a result of this. For example, our Friedreich ataxia trial, we're calling a phase three trial because we had a phase two trial before. And if that's positive, that has the potential to also be for approval. And so I always like to think of what happens on the other side of the trial is as important as the number we put on it. But obviously 743, we've done a lot of work with. I think one of the unique features of this program is that we have a lot of safety data, particularly in kids. We've treated kids under, you know, a month of age, and the drug has a very strong safety record. And I think that, you know, that's really important, especially when you're going to do a study in kids who are really sick.
Really sick. Yeah, it is. I think those study parameters are not only as a parent that helps calm the nerves, but it just shows the depth of research that has gone into putting this together before anybody, any human is put to trial. I think that PTC has gone above and beyond when I looked through all of the pre-trial data, so to speak, and the dynamics of information. It was, safety was definitely at the top of the list. And that is so encouraging because you are working with some very fragile children and young children. And I didn't even know about somebody less than a month of age. So that to me says that, again, that's the top of mind for you guys is safety first. So good on you for that. If we're not eligible for this trial, so let's say we have a child who's in that 17, 18 range and we aren't eligible this time, what do you see in the future for younger adults moving forward?
Yeah, that's a great question, Stephanie. I have long said and will continue to say that our goal is to try to make 743 available to any person, child or adult who could benefit. You know, over the years, we've done studies in children, we've done studies in adults, and part of this, I really view this as a starting point, not the finishing point, right? And so that what we would, you know, in an ideal world, have a, you know, a successful trial and then be able to move on to expanding the number of eligible people who could be treated with 743. So I would say, as respectfully say to folks, be patient. We hear you. We know there's such a tremendous need. For therapy, and you know, I'm a firm believer in trying to do everything we can to make sure that a potential beneficial therapy could be available to anyone who could benefit. And that may be someone who has seizures, someone who doesn't have seizures. It may be someone who meets the age criteria, someone who doesn't meet the age criteria, someone who right now may not otherwise be eligible for the study for some reason. We see you, we know you're there, we know the need is there, and you know, we are doing our best.
And I think it's great for us, myself included, to remind our community that you have been in this for 10 years and you've been watching us. You've definitely been working as our advocate in the lab. And so to know that, like you just said, we see you and we're gonna get to your criteria as soon as we can. And we're not gonna leave you by the wayside. And I think that's really important. I know we have a lot of patients who are adult onset who sometimes feel they're neglected in the study industry, and vice versa, where children feel like they're too fragile to participate. So there's always that tug of war on, you know, who gets science today. And yeah. I think this is really going to be very beneficial for our community. And just the data that you're going to be able to collect moving towards those positive endpoints of your study and being able to physically prove what you've already been able to academically prove is so important. And I am just excited to start helping families get enrolled. My mind has already been on the hamster wheel of families that I've been talking to about, okay, how do we get you to the next site? Let's get you signed up. Let's see if you work for this, because it's such a need. And I think it'll be amazing for so many families. When do you see, for any reason, this has already been a question, do you see COVID stopping the study for any reason?
I really don't anticipate that. I don't want to say we're through the worst of COVID, because I think we're still in pretty bad times. But you know, I think a lot of people are optimistic that we will have less of a COVID impact as time goes on. But Right. But again, we made the very, and it was a difficult decision, but important decision to start this trial in the face of COVID at a time when it was really bad, and heading into, you know, the holiday season, where everyone said, you know, forget about flattening the curve. If we could just stop it from keep going up so much, like leaps and bounds, it would be great. But we said, look, we're going to do it, because, you know, you're going to wait for the perfect day. It is not going to be a perfect day. And as I said, that, you know, we were so aware that people's needs didn't go away in COVID. They actually probably increased. Mm-hmm. And I know for people affected by rare disease, where, as you said earlier, Stephanie, it often feels very lonely. Well, how about now, when your connections to the outside world are less, and it might be thinking about trying to get your routine healthcare, or what happens to my insurance if I need to have a physician authorization for myself, my compounding pharmacy closed, where I go to, all these things, the pressures have only gone up.
Right.
And so we made the important decision to start this trial, and we did, and we're going to keep going. You know, obviously our goal would be to speed up. Our goal would be to get as many people eligible into the trial as possible, get all our sites open so we can get on the other side of of the trial and continue to move things forward. So we're working really hard. We're not even thinking about slowing down. We're actually thinking about speeding up. We want to get this trial enrolled and get things moving forward.
How many sites do you foresee actually being part of the trial now?
So we've said all along we're looking somewhere between 10 and 15. That could even go higher.
Wow.
You know, it's a balance, quite mm-hmm. honestly. We want to make sure that we have sites that are, you know, having geographic diversity is important. Mm-hmm. We do know that there's certain parts of the countries where there are just fewer mito docs than others. I know patients and families travel, hundreds and sometimes thousands of miles for regular care. We know that's the case, but we're doing the best we can to get, sites spread out throughout the United States and then outside of the United States as well. And so we're looking carefully. If we need to add more sites, we'll do it. It takes a little bit of time. I don't know if everyone's aware of it. It could take many months to actually go from deciding today we're going to open up, this mito center to actually getting it open. There's a lot of work that goes on and safety reviews and contracts, and it just takes time, which is why you may wonder, well, why is this site open? But my site, the one closest to me, is not open yet. It sometimes takes time, but again, any site is open to any patient.
Okay. What about non-English speaking patients? Is there availability for interpreters, or how will that work? Is that just site dependent?
So everyone is welcome.
Okay.
Sites themselves have to take certain processes in place. For example, we've worked with centers in the United States that have a lot of Spanish speaking families. And, we work to make sure that there's a consent form that is been thoroughly checked to be appropriate and capture the exact meaning of things in Spanish. So things like that. Obviously, we're working at sites around the world where, we want to make sure, Italian, Portuguese, Spanish, French, whatever it is, that things are language appropriate.
Okay. That's good to know, because sometimes that's a barrier, and sometimes it's just a presumed barrier where people feel like we're not eligible because. So I really want to stress to people that please don't make an assumption on this. Let's get to the website. Let's look at the criteria. Let's look where the sites are. And if you have questions, we're at Mito Action. We're here to help you cipher through and, talk through your decisions on if you want to join or not. And even I've already participated in just being on a phone call with families who are speaking with their physicians on, is this the right opportunity for me, and just going through the appropriate questions, and enthusiastically, yes, we're hearing is yes, this is a great opportunity for your patient. How can we help you get there?
Yeah. we're so grateful for the community, so grateful for your partnership and help and guidance. I think clinical trials are scary for people. Right. And there's a lot of unknown. And I think right now, more than ever, people don't have a great interest in more unknown and uncertainty. So I think it's, more than ever, really important the guidance and expertise and support that Mito Action provides. I'll also say if someone's interested in the trial and maybe feels, maybe not in February, maybe March or April, maybe when this changes or that changes, that's okay too. Feel free to reach out and get information now. Yep. Just because you reach out and get information doesn't mean you're obligated to pursue it. I'm a big believer that people should be as informed as possible, get all your questions answered. And it's never too soon to get information, even if you don't want to act on it for a few months.
As a public health geek, I have learned statistically that people need to research and contemplate that decision 3 to 5 times. And so I'm constantly telling people, going to the website does not automatically say, you're raising your hand, sign me up. Right. You are simply just gathering your information for further review. And I'm assuming, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if at any time somebody wants to leave the study, they have that ability to say, you know what, this just isn't working for us, we need to stop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. People, this is, you always, always have that right. It's your personal right to elect to participate, to discontinue participation. That's absolutely an individual's right.
Good. I know, because that's a fear for a lot of our patients, that they feel like once they're in, they're going down a rabbit hole. And like you just said, we are on fatigue of unknown right now. I mean, the whole world is, every day is a new day. Every day is Groundhog's Day. And it's kind of weird how that works. But just knowing that they have control over something that's so uncontrollable, again, I think is super important to give this community, that you have the right to join and you have the right to stop if this isn't working for you and you just feel that this isn't the right time. Like you said, just looking over, you don't have to make a decision today or tomorrow. This will be ongoing. Think about it, talk about it with other people, and think about it again. And just because you're going to the websites and you're asking for information is not making a commitment. And I think that's really important for people to understand that nobody's, we're not buying a car here. Nobody's making a sign today. So.
And look, we are so grateful for people's interest in participating and are so aware of sacrifices families make on a daily basis, you know, caring for a family member with MITO, and that, you know, we are aware that having folks participate in a clinical trial is another burden in a way. Mm-hmm. And we appreciate the interest, we appreciate the trust. And I'll tell you, we appreciate it, and the way we appreciate it is we make sure we've done everything possible to try to minimize the burden. Obviously, we'll follow all the rules and do all the things the right way, but we've done our best still to minimize the burden. And also in this COVID environment, we've worked as hard as possible to minimize any possible risk.
That is great to know. And like I've told you, we are committed to helping patients answer questions, ease that burden mentally as we can, helping them think of what safer ways to travel. What do they need to make sure they're getting there safely? I know I recently did a podcast with a family who traveled, and they gave me some amazing tips on how to travel with all of their medication and things I hadn't even thought about, on just how to get to point B safely. And it really freed up them from feeling stressful. And so I thought, well, this will be great to implement into our trial patients on, here's some things we know. Here's how to get through TSA. You know, I didn't even know until just recently that TSA actually has a board of people from rare disease that come and talk to them about, here's what a feeding tube looks like. Here's what our ports look like. You know, this is why I have these leg braces on, so that these security people understand and have the ability to see ahead of time, oh yeah, that's what that looks like. That should be okay to go through. That's amazing. I didn't know that. And so I think that's important for people to realize that everybody wants people to be successful. I mean, I guess I shouldn't say everybody, but most people in the world want everybody to be successful because it makes everybody successful. So again, I'm excited about this. I do not have a child who would be, he's over 18, but who would not qualify, but I know eventually we're going to get there with his disease. And we will definitely be signing up to be a participant, just because I just feel in the greater good, it helps everybody, you know, to get as much data in there as we can and sift it through. And who knows, maybe PTC is going to come up with the next medication for, we saw this during this trial and we saw this need, so let's work on that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it really is, I can tell you, been doing this a while, and it is exciting, you know, looking around today versus say, you know, 10 or 11 years ago, there's so much more research, more clinical trials, more companies looking to develop drugs. And I think that's amazing. That's how we're going to get there, right? We're going to get there by participating in clinical trials, and we know not every one of them is going to work, but you know what? If we don't try, it's never going to work. And we're going to get there. And I know as a community, that the community itself has had put their hope in a lot of places over the years and seemingly disappointed. And, you know, we take a step forward and maybe then a step back and a step forward. We're going to get there. And, you know, I think the community, the community large, you know, the patients, families, MITO Action, companies, I think we're working together stronger and better than ever. Mm-hmm. And we're getting closer and closer. And I know it doesn't always feel like that, but I believe we are, and I think we are. You know, we owe such a debt of gratitude to patients and families who make the sacrifices to participate in trials. They're the pioneers. They're the ones helping push us forward and to get to that finish line.
Well, thank you for recognizing that. I know many times where disease folks do feel invisible and not worthy And I've heard numerous times that it would be easier to have a form of cancer than a rare disease, because at least you have a protocol. And so I'm hoping as companies like PTC move forward, that we are starting to develop protocols. And at the very least, we're starting to develop a medical community that says, I've read something about this, instead of, I don't know anything about this.
Yeah.
So I think that's important. Well, I know that we're getting some questions in on Facebook Live. So what we'll do is we'll compile those questions and then we will get them answered back individually to everybody. I think that's the easiest way to do that. But Dr. Klein, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Do you think we covered everything? Was there anything else you wanted to say or let everybody know?
No, I think this was great. Again, thank you so much for the opportunity, and thank you and MitoAction for their really decade of partnership and continued partnership. We're incredibly enthusiastic about the MITEI study. It represents a lot of years of work and good science, and welcome as many people as can participate as possible. And we do have the website, www.mit-estudy.com, that should answer questions. If it doesn't, reach out to us and we'll get your questions answered. And we really look forward to continuing our efforts to deliver 743 to patients.
We look forward to standing right alongside you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye.